From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, can physics save us all? Get ready for that. Here's what's happening. First of all, condolences to the family of Coast to Coast guest Rabbi Moshe Yess, who we have been told just passed away suddenly. You know, he was just on with me December 5th discussing prophecy. He will be missed. Rabbi Moshe Yess has passed on. Here we go again. Thousands of octopuses have washed up on the shore of northern Portugal, and scientists are simply stumped about why. They're calling it an environmental disaster. They are issuing a very rather strange warning. Officials are telling people out in that area, do not pick up the octopuses. Do not eat them. They cover a five-mile stretch of beach. No reason yet for their appearance. Now add this to the list of dead fish, crabs, birds. What's next? Something's going on this planet, folks. A major 7.2 magnitude earthquake rocked a remote area of southwestern Pakistan early Wednesday there, shaking many parts of the country and causing tremors as far away as India and the United Arab Emirates. No word of damage there. Smoking is the main reason why, on average, men die sooner than women across Europe. I guess it's the same here, too, according to research. The World Health Organization figures on death rates reveal tobacco-related illness accounts for up to 60% of the gender health gap in most countries there. In the UK, women live an average of 4 years longer than men. R. Sergeant Shriver, the Kennedy in law who was the Peace Corps director in John F. Kennedy's administration and George McGovern's running mate in 1972, has died. He died after being hospitalized for several days. He was 95 years old. I remember interviewing him in Detroit along with McGovern a very long time ago. Former Vice President Dick Cheney says he believes he will have to make a decision soon on whether to have a heart transplant, given his medical history. He's had five heart attacks. Cheney says he's getting by now on a battery-powered heart pump, which makes it awkward to walk around. He also says he hasn't made a decision yet on whether to get a transplant, but adds that technology is getting better and better. Christian Wild, journalist, author, who monitors these stories for us. What do you think? I mean, he's 69 years old, Christian. You know, he has had five heart attacks since the age of 37. Mm-hmm. Could he survive a heart transplant?
Well, he may not have to have one, George. I'm just speculating. But you see, he's been given the Cadillac of LVADs, that's the left ventricle assist device. And up till now, it would only work, the models prior to this one, and this one is called the HeartMate 2, but the earlier models would only work for a patient to keep them alive while they're waiting for a heart transplant for a matter of months. And unfortunately, 3,000 people each year die while they're waiting for that heart transplant. So he may have a new option, because this particular HeartMate 2 is designed that it might work permanently for you. And if you're 69 years of age, if you feel you're doing really well with it, you may not need the transplant.
Does there come a point in one's life where you say, I'm 69, I've had five heart attacks, I've lived my life, I'm just going to fade away?
Some people will definitely have that attitude. Others will say, I'm going to go down kicking, and I'll do anything I can to stay on this planet. But he did have the five heart attacks he had, I think the second one might have been the game changer, because in 2001, he went into atrial fibrillation, and his heart went into erratic heart rate. 300,000 people a year in America die from that sudden death brought about when the heart goes out of rhythm. So to control the electrical episodes, I believe he was outfitted with not only a defibrillator, I know he had a defibrillator, but also the pacemaker combination. And they control the heart rhythms to almost zero events. So Mr. Cheney has today the protection of the defibrillator, pacemaker, and now the left ventricle assist device. He may continue to do so well, and we hope he does, that he has the option of having a heart transplant or not. We wish him well.
Are you still writing about turmeric in the newsletter?
You know, this last issue, I put 19 reasons why you should take turmeric, and they're all scientifically found. And, of course, we talked about the three stem cell trials for macular degeneration that are teaming up right now, stem cells for melanoma remission, and dental pulp may actually heal the brain. The reason is that the tooth is very close to the brain in neurons. And then we talked about, in this particular issue, that they're working to see if they can build a whole new spine.
All right. And your newsletter phone number, if people are interested, Christian, is?
Oh, yes. 866-STEM-123. And, of course, you have the website address.
MyHeartBook.com. Great. Thanks, Christian. A Cypriot monk caught at a Greek airport with the skeletal remains of a nun in his baggage told authorities he was taking the relics of a saint back to his monastery. The 56-year-old was detained at the Athens airport after security staff discovered a skull wrapped in cloth and skeletal remains in a sheet inside his baggage. Well, the remains apparently ended up being those of a nun who died 4 years ago. She was not a saint, but had once been a nun at a convent. Strange story there. In St. Louis, a man has been accused of stealing a $3,500 dive watch from a fellow passenger going through a security line at Lambert's International Airport. The man was recently charged with stealing $500 or more, according to records filed in St. Louis County Circuit Court. The theft happened back in November in Terminal 2 after someone put a dive watch in a bin and sent it through the X-ray machine. The bin was apparently returned to the front of the line with the watch still inside. Well, police said the security video shows that the man picked up the watch, put his coat on top of it after his own bin ran through the X-ray machine and kind of like walked through. He's seen putting the watch in his pocket. He was arrested. He admitted to taking the watch, but told police that he had done so thinking the watch was his. How would you not know that? Invisible tanks and maybe invisible soldiers may soon be charging onto battlefields. A British weapons manufacturer is making good on the promise of Wonder Woman's invisible jet, describing an e-camouflage system that uses electronic ink to disguise combat vehicles by projecting videos of the countryside right onto them. Apparently, you cannot see the vehicle when that's going on. Japanese researchers will launch a project this year to resurrect the long-extinct mammoth by using cloning technology to bring the ancient animal back to life. In around 5 years' time, the researchers will try to revive the species by obtaining tissue this summer from the carcass of a mammoth preserved in a Russian research laboratory, shades of Jurassic Park. Under the plan, the nuclei of the mammoth cells will be inserted into the elephant's egg cell, from which the nuclei have been removed to create an embryo containing mammoth genes, and then we'll see what happens. In a moment, Marshall Clarfield joins us. His book, Adam, the Missing Link. We're going to talk about this cloning procedure. Can they really do it? Marshall's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, let me tell you about Marshall Clarfield. He's been on before. Lingering questions about man's origins ever since he was an undergrad at Caltech haunted him. His recent book that we've talked about, Adam the Missing Link, blows the lid off the closely held package of historical and scientific facts proving that the human race was created by alien genetic engineering technology nearly a quarter of a million years ago. That's a fascinating subject, Marshall, all by itself. How are you, my friend?
I'm just fine, George. Good to talk to you again.
You too. So what do we know about this woolly mammoth project?
Okay, every time a cloning subject comes up, I get excited.
And this is a good one.
This is a good one, yeah. They discovered this critter about 4 years ago, and they think it died 20,000 years ago in Siberia. What they did is they jackhammered a block of ice with him in it, weighed about 23,000 pounds, and they put it in an ice cave to keep it cold. Now, what they intend to do, is, as you described earlier, was to find an appropriate egg from an African elephant. And then they remove very delicately the nucleus of that egg, and they put the DNA of the mammoth into the elephant's egg and fertilize it, and then they plant it, or actually,
reinsert
put it in the womb of the surrogate mother. Now, 600 days later.
Is that how long the gestation period is for an elephant?
600 600 days. It's amazing. Now, what will be produced won't be a pure woolly mammoth, because it's going to have the DNA of the mother.
Right.
And so what they'll get is kind of a bicarmel woolly mammoth. In order to get the pure species strain into existence, there's a lot of work they've got to do.
But they can get there eventually.
Yeah, I think if they do selective breeding and create more. The one question that came to my mind, every place I read, I couldn't find the answer for it, George, was most clones are sterile. So how are they going to get them to reproduce themselves? They're going to have to do something to these clones to make them fertile.
That's a good point.
So they can reproduce each other. And then, eventually by selective breeding, they may come up with a strain. Now, the Japanese are kind of more cautious than the Americans and the Russians. They want to, I think they understand that the cloning process is not exact and it's very difficult to do. So they're saying, let's not put them in museums, out in the park with a zoo.
Like Jurassic Park.
Like Jurassic Park, yeah. I mean, they don't think that's a good idea. And I agree. This is, the one thing that's kind of interesting is that nobody really knows the answer to why the woolly mammoths went extinct.
And how many we had on this planet at the time?
Right? They crossed the globe from the Siberian plains all the way to North America during the Ice Age.
Well, they were woolly, right? That's why they call them woolly mammoth. That means they must have been living in an environment needed that.
Yeah, right. Now, some scientists speculate that they died off because of the climate change, the end of the Ice Age.
Mm-hmm.
Others think they were hunted, like the buffalo, to extinction. And there is a new group that say, no, the virus has got them. So they're going to be able to check all that out when they do this process, because they'll be able to get the information from the hairs of the woolly mammoth, whether there were viruses infecting it. And they'll be able to tell how old it was. And it'll be an interesting project. I'm going to follow it very closely.
Well, they're going to be able to get tissue samples.
Yeah, they'll get DNA tissue samples from which... There's two ways of...
Which they can't get from a dinosaur, right? Because
no, there aren't any,
just fossils now.
Fossils that are frozen. But there's two ways to... this is a male mammoth. And if they can get some sperm from him, that would be ideal to fertilize the elephant egg. But barring that, they'll take DNA. See, what happens when they remove the nucleus of the elephant's egg, they've taken out the brain center, the command center, for the operation of what is produced. And when they replace it with DNA or the sperm of the elephant, in comes two chromosomes with 20 to maybe 30,000 genes.
Why are they talking about this taking 5 years?
I think it's getting it up, getting it going, and... They might make a mistake the first time, George. It might not work.
They could make a monster.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think that we have records of that happening. And they need to see, they can't take an egg from a live African elephant. They have to take it from dead elephants. So the project to supply them with enough material, eggs, to try these experiments is going to take a long time. And then, of course, the gestation period is almost 2 years.
What a story, though, when this happens.
Oh, yeah. I was, every time this comes up, like I said, it's a very complex science, and it takes a lot of delicate work, and sometimes it just doesn't work. And we know that because in the cuneiform tablets, we have a record of the aliens who did this very same process and produced us, the mistakes that they made. That they couldn't get it to work. They were doing all their mixing. They're mixing of the DNA and the egg in a crystal vase, which they thought was sterile and a better way to go. And I guess one time they decided to try a earthen vase, and the dirt seemed to do the trick, because when they mixed it, that one worked, and they got at them.
Was this genetic engineering that was done on us?
Yes, genetic engineering on a very higher level than ours.
Is that why they call them the gods?
I think so. I think they were so far advanced. You know, the civilization may be a million years more advanced than we are. We're catching up, but slowly.
Well, we're beginning to realize that the technology that they apparently used on us, we're using now, you know, for cloning techniques, as primitive as it is.
No, we're actually a bicarmal species, Homo sapiens, because we are the DNA of Homo erectus plus the DNA of the Anunnaki, which were the aliens. And they put their DNA into the egg of the Homo erectus and planted it in the womb of one of their birth mothers.
What's the worst that could happen, Marshall, if they screw this up?
Ugly, George. Ugly.
Like eight legs and
yeah,
things
I mean,
like that?
You can't imagine how complex genetic engineering is because there are cells that reproduce. They have to have commands, and there's tags on them. And they have to get the tags all lined up so that it's going to reproduce what they want it to reproduce. And the more I've researched this, I'm amazed that we have, for about the last 45 years, been attempting to make this happen. You know, the Chinese want to save the pandas, and the drug people want to get cures for cancer, and science and medical people want to get replacement organs. All of this can be done with genetic engineering if it's done properly. But I don't think we've got a handle completely on we're getting there. I mean, these guys are working really diligently, and I think that We will advance, and the one thing, what a clone is, your audience should understand that a clone is the production of multiple identical offspring, in other words, like twins. They have to be identical to what they're trying to do. And that's, in itself, nature's way. Sometimes twins don't come out identical. They weren't cloned.
Now, let me ask you this, because everything I've heard about cloning has said that, you know, if you want to clone someone, it'll be identical. In this particular case, you just said that the woolly mammoth
will not be.
Will
not,
not
perfect.
Be.
No, it can't be. You look, figure out that the...
Well, how come we are?
Well,
if they clone a human?
We are the product of bicarmal cloning, which was the two species, so them and the...
So we're levels ahead of this mammoth.
Yeah. And when Adam and Eve were created, they could not reproduce. Because they were sterile, like all clones are sterile. And Dolly the sheep was sterile. And, you know, all these monkeys and rats and things that they've produced through cloning are not able to reproduce themselves. But in the Bible, interestingly enough, there's a story about Adam's rib. There was an operation. They said Eve was created out of Adam's rib. Well, if you read the cuneiform tablets as explained in my book, you get the real story. What they did was a very complex operation where they took the bone marrow out of Adam's rib and put it into Eve somehow and made her fertile, converted a cloned specimen into a female that could produce offspring, and then off we went, you know.
And here we are.
Yeah. So they have all those challenges. You know, when they get this woolly mammoth, it won't be pure. It'll have elephant genes in it, and it'll have to breed those genes out to get to the final.
Okay, I see what you mean. So that could take some time.
Oh, it'd take forever.
Yeah,
I think, you know, it's a long process. They don't gestate that quickly.
So why are they doing this? Because they think it's exciting? Because it's fun? Why do they want a mammoth?
I think it's science in search of answers to questions that they don't know.
They want to see if they can do it. That's what
they want. You're right, George. They want to see if they can do it, and they want to answer the question, what happened to them? Why did they go extinct? You know, we suspect that the dinosaurs went extinct because there was a meteorite that hit us and wiped them out.
In the Yucatan, yeah.
Yeah, ruined their food supply and a lot of the other species in the earth. But the woolly mammoth apparently was 30, 40,000 years in existence, and then all of a sudden they disappear.
Now, the one that they chopped out of ice,
yeah,
is this the one that had must have been eating, and they think that it froze instantly?
Yeah, yeah. Somehow the things that they've been able to extract from this animal, this frozen animal, has enabled them to time date it. In other words,
it's a baby too, isn't it? Is it a small one?
Yeah, I think it's like, you know, I don't know how big mammoths got. They think it's 9 years old or something like that.
All right. Well,
but they might have grown faster than, they don't know. They have no way of telling all that, but they can tell from the DNA of the blood what the species was.
Hey, Marshall, we're going to take some phone calls with you both on this incredible story about cloning the woolly mammoth, and also your theory about ETs creating us. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment with Marshall Klarfeld on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, Dr. Amit Goswami joins us as we talk about physics and keeping us alive. Talking about being alive, being dead. Listen to this one again. Mass animal deaths continue. Now they found 200 dead cows in a Wisconsin field. Veterinarians think they died of some kind of bovine disease. Who knows? When we come back, let's take your phone calls with Marshall Klarfeld as we talk about genetically engineering the mammoth and maybe us on Coast to Coast AM. We're with Marshall Klarfeld. Marshall, have you been following these bizarre stories of dead birds, fish?
Yes, George, it's absolutely astounding to me that it's around the world. I thought first it was just in our country, you know, in one state, but there's fly zones that the birds follow. But there's other things falling out of the sky, and there's fish dying in the sea, and octopuses.
Yeah, it's weird. And now these 200 cows in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
My gosh.
I'm suspicious of who's doing it.
So there's something going on.
Hey, listen, I had an idea.
Yeah.
The first story that the aliens gave us was called Gilgamesh.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a story on that.
I remember that.
Yeah. Now, in that story, one of the chief characters is Enkidu. And Enkidu is a cloned copy of the king, Gilgamesh. They tell how they left his body hairy, like the Homo erectus that he came from, but they put his face, DNA face, exactly like the king. Now, that's pretty clever cloning, I think. But why'd they tell us that in that story?
That's a good story.
Yeah, they told us that because they said they could do that.
They
and verified the fact that they made us.
What do you think of 2012?
Well, that's an interesting date, but I don't believe, like most people, that it's the end of the world.
You know, the guy who starred in Green Hornet, Seth Rogen?
Yeah.
I think he was talking to George Lucas. He's convinced that George Lucas thinks the world is going to end at 2012.
He does.
Yep.
Well, I have to disagree. I think it's just a cycle. The Mayan calendar was created by...
I hope you're right.
Enki, and Enki is a very clever...
I got plans beyond 2012, Marshall. I got things to do. You know, I got to keep the show going and things like that.
Right. Well, we'll know soon, you know.
All right, let's take some calls. You ready?
Okay, sure.
Casper, Wyoming. Jamie, you're up with us on Coast to Coast. Hi, Jamie.
Hi, George.
Hi.
I was wondering, the one guy said that to get the egg, you would need to get it from a dead elephant. I was wondering why it needed to be dead. Why couldn't they just get it from a live elephant?
That's a good question, Jamie. And what I meant to say was when an elephant dies, they take like the organs. They remove the organs. And one of the things they do when an elephant dies is they take the eggs and preserve them in a cold atmosphere. They're not allowed to do certain things. There's certain laws in certain countries. I don't know what the laws are in Africa, but I know what they are in this country. And it's forbidden to do certain things in the cloning arena. So, like stem cell research and they think...
Okay, but biologically, you could still do it from...
Sure, you can do it as long as you got it, you know, right away. Just like the when people do donate their organs to science for other people to use their eyes, their liver, their heart, etc. When an elephant dies, they just take certain parts from it, and one of them they take is these eggs and then freeze them.
Okay, let's go to Adam, Springfield, Missouri, east of the Rockies. Go ahead, Adam, you're on with us.
Hey, how you doing, Mr. Norrie?
Good.
Marshall, over the ages, basically I want to ask to Mr. Marshall.
Yes.
Over the ages, the half-man, half-animal that has been, can't think of the term, projected onto rock and form like that.
I know where you're going.
If there's absolutely any truth to that, and if there is truth to that, then also must be truth to the myths of Zeus and so on.
Well, the Zeus story is a very, very interesting story because the original pantheon, which is 12 of the alien gods, was started in Sumeria, which predated Greek civilization by many thousands of years. And they had the head character is a fellow named Enlil. And if you look at his characteristics and his brother Enki, who was the water god, and you trace it all through the Romans and the Greeks, you get to Zeus and his brother Neptune, and then in Jupiter and Poseidon. Or what was it the other way around? It was Zeus and Poseidon and Jupiter and Neptune, the water god and his brother. So if these folks were immortal and could have lived that long, the history that we have given to us of their existence and the things that they did could very well, in my guesstimation, be the Anunnaki pantheon of Sumerian gods.
You are very close with the theories of the late Zechariah Sitchin, Marshall.
Yes, I ascribe to, I've read all his books, George, and I'm sorry he's gone from us because he was a great resource for me when I had crazy questions. I would ask Zechariah to straighten me out. Yes. But now I'm on my own, and I'm kind of a disciple of his theory of genetic engineering, which I put forward in my book. And whenever people interview me, I bring up the fact that he's the author. In 1976, he wrote The 12th Planet, which he described the civilization of the Sumerians, and he interpreted the cylinder seals and the cuneiform tablets, which was the written information and the picture information, in such a way that it wasn't myth, it was a reality to me.
Well, it is a great theory, and one that you spent a lot of time...
I was looking for the answers, George. All my life I looked for the answers, and when I found Zechariah and his books, I became convinced that that's the closest thing I've ever found to explain how a species like ours, which is only 250,000 years old, can be walking on the moon. It just doesn't happen.
No, not at all. Let's go to West Hartford, Connecticut. It's Bill's turn on Coast to Coast. Hey, Bill, go ahead.
Hi, Marshall. Hi, I have a quick, fascinating question for you. I'm going to play natural scientist advocate, if I may use a play on words, so to speak, to ask you a quick question.
Sure.
Going by natural anthropologist and the fossil record, et cetera, if what you are saying, your position is wrong, if it's wrong, and I'm not saying it's wrong, but I'm saying if it's wrong, and we go by natural scientist, and we, instead of us being created by the Anunnakis, I'm not saying you're right or wrong. My question is, what would the most intelligent hominid look like today, and how different would they be from us humans if what you say happened didn't happen and just natural selection took its place from Homo erectus? And
yeah, good question, Bill. And as you know, evolution takes millions of years to happen. Little slight changes like the Homo erectus species populated the planet Earth over a period of 1,800,000 years. But their tool-making capacity was just primitive. All they could had was spears and stones. Here, our species appears with no fossil record. This is what I point out to people, that in order to have evolution, you've got to show the species between Homo erectus and Homo sapien, and there has to be some fossil remains someplace of this very slow evolutionary process, and there isn't. They've never found those bones. And to have a species like ours, which is only 250,000 years young, compared to the other evolutionary species on our planet, it's impossible for me to imagine us evolving so rapidly that within 250,000 years we're walking on the moon. That's a tough one, Bill.
You know, I'm also fascinated by the possibility that there could have been ancient nuclear wars on this planet, Marshall. Did you ever uncover anything?
Yes, definitely. Zechariah uncovered it, as a matter of fact, in the tablets. And he wrote voluminously in the Lost Book of Enki.
Mm-hmm.
He told the story of the atomic war that he pinpointed it to 2024 BC, which is 4,000 years ago. And there's physical evidence in the Sinai Desert of a heat explosion, and the Bible tells us...
It's a green sheen of glass, right?
A glass. That's a byproduct of an atomic explosion. And if you read the description of Sodom and Gomorrah and compare it to Hiroshima and Nagasaki, it's not much different.
No, not at all. And the testing that they did.
Yep.
Yep. Let's go to Alice in Vancouver, Washington, first-time caller. Hi, Alice. Go ahead.
Hi, good evening. I have a question about something I heard not all that long ago about the oryx that was discovered and still viable to be able to be cloned in Germany, I believe it was.
What is the object?
An oryx. I believe they were like
right,
cows 6 feet at the shoulder, something like that. And they were going to do it to provide beef or, you know, food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, there's lots of animals that have been cloned, Alice. There's a lot of beef and a lot of controversy about people eating cloned beef. Mm-hmm. Some countries, some of our trading partners won't accept our beef.
Well, I don't even want to eat genetically modified food, let alone a cloned, you know, cow or something.
Well, those are the things we're going to have to face into and adjust to. And as far as the orcs goes, that's, you know, you do what you have to do. If you don't have a meat supply, you can make it now.
Well, that's going to be part of the problem, Marshall. And the problem is that a planet of 6.7 billion people today, soon to go to 9 billion in another, mm-hmm. you know, 10, 20 years, and
yes.
God knows how many after that.
Right.
What are you going to do?
How do you feed all those people? Well, they're doing a fish thing. I don't know if I read the other day about cloning salmon.
You either feed them all or you reduce the population dramatically.
What's happening in Tunisia? When food runs out,
people go nuts.
People go nuts. There's riots.
That's
people
good.
Don't want to live without food, and I don't blame them. So the responsibility of the powerful countries that have this technology to provide crops that will feed the population as it grows is a very heavy responsibility.
Let's go to Louisville, Kentucky, east of the Rockies. Hey, Cliff, go ahead.
Hey, George. Briefly, I want to tell you that I'm 46 years old. I went blind 3 years ago.
Yes.
And it happened because of a surgery that went bad.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
I can tell you, you know, it's one topic I've never heard on your show, and I've been a close listener since back in the Art Bell days. And just briefly, sometimes, you know, I've dealt with blind people now. I go to a school to train to try to get back into the work, you know, field again.
Right.
And I've met so many blind people, and they're... We're miserable, okay? Especially if you were able to see when you were 20, 30, 40 years old in the prime of your life, and then all of a sudden it's gone.
Right. If you were born blind, it's different. I think people handle themselves better.
They do, and I've met plenty of people on both ends of the spectrum that were either born blind or went blind later in life, such as myself.
What was the surgery, by the way, Cliff? I got to ask you that.
I had an old cornea injury from actually when I played ball in high school, and the cornea just started to deteriorate. And I had a surgery on, that was my left eye, and my whole retina just totally detached, and they said folded up like an old window shade. And then they saw scar tissue on my right eye, and we're going to perform a vitreous peel, and I wound up going blind. But what happened is I lost about 97%. I still had a small pinhole of vision out of my right peripheral when I first went blind. So I was able to, if people stood in the right spot under the right light, I was able to see them, not clearly, but I was able to make out faces. Now I suffer from something that's called Charles-Binet syndrome. Have you ever heard of it?
No.
Oh, I haven't heard of it, Cliff.
I see optical illusions in front of my face all day long that aren't there.
Wow.
Sometimes they shape into like the forms of rocks and just ugly, ugly sights. And even if I close my eyes, it doesn't go
Cliff,
away.
Cliff, let me ask you a strange question, and it's going to sound weird, but I mean, this is something I've always wanted to ask someone who has had an affliction like yours. You dream, I assume, right?
Yes.
What is it like for a blind person? You wake up and you still can't see. I mean, how do you really know that you're still not dreaming, that you're awake? What's the difference there for you?
That's an excellent question. And like I said, I could talk to you about this for hours, George, because I'm sure there's plenty of people that would be interested in it. Like I said, I suffer from this Charles-Binet, which even when I close my eyes, whatever image is forming in front of me, whatever hallucination I'm having,
mm-hmm.
doesn't go away. But when I do finally fall into a deep sleep and I sleep, I see in all my dreams.
Mm.
Even when I dream about events that are going to happen in the future, my son graduating from college, all of those things, I see clear as day.
Remarkable. I bet you can't wait to go to sleep.
And sometimes I can't because the hallucinations just they drive me crazy sometimes. They really do.
Well, do me a
medication, but it's
do me a favor, Cliff, because I've only got a few minutes here with Marshall, but great subject. Give Tom your phone number and we'll try to get you on at a later time. Let's go to Jen in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Jen, go ahead.
Hi. Yes. Hello, George. And hello, Marshall.
Yeah. Hi, Jen.
I've got a question.
Okay.
My question is, I'm a student of Dolores Cannon,
mm-hmm.
and I've opened up her book, The Convoluted Universe, to some of her research through hypnosis, deep hypnosis, about ancient Atlantis, when there was a lot of experimentation, not only crossing breeds of animals, but also crossing humans and animals to make slaves. And so my question for Marshall is, if he feels we've evolved enough since Atlantis not to recreate the same problems, and how can we safeguard against recreating those nightmarish events?
Jen, I think you've touched on a very sensitive but intelligent question, because the mistakes that were made can be covered up if you're in control of everything. Like the Anunnaki were completely in control of the planet, and if they in their laboratories made these crossbreeding mistakes, they could destroy them. We in our civilization have laws that really honor life and all forms, and it's very difficult to clean us up. So my answer to you is that it's going to be difficult, because the people who are doing the experiments right now are not perfect. They're not perfectionists, and they're going to make some really bad mistakes. The results are going to be kind of horrific.
Marshall, the website I still have, AdamTheMissingLink.com.
www.AdamTheMissingLink. Right, George.
All right. Next up, let's go to Joe in Modesto, California. Hi, Joe.
Hello.
Go ahead.
George, Marshall, thank you. Excellent show.
Thank you, Joe.
Something I've always been... Sorry, it's my dog. Something I've always been on, the cloning. With, as far as the progression, say you have a female African elephant, and you have the cloning material you're going to put in.
Right, from the mammoth.
When all is said and done with the first cloning experiment, you have, what, 50%?
Well, your DNA that you fertilize the African elephant's egg with has to have all the control chromosomes and nuclei.
So the resultant...
They don't get a bad result. No, they
fetus
know
will be
much,
50%,
now, we've
50%,
the technique
right?
of doing that, but it's still not perfected.
Okay, so it may not be 50%.
That's right.
Of each. What are the chances? Would it be 40%? Can you give a number?
I can't give you a percentage. I'm not in
okay.
that field. I've done a lot of reading and research on
it. And then
it.
I was looking for generations. How many generations
oh.
are you looking at before you get to near 100%?
Well,
so you get to 80 or 90%.
You'd have to do selective breeding. In other words,
it would take time.
It would take a lot of time, because
either way, it's going to take generations.
I'll give you an example.
Yes, I would.
You can
so.
Take cattle. And certain cattle eat a little bit and gain a lot of weight, and other cattle eat a lot and don't gain any weight. So if you selectively breed them, you could theoretically end up with a cow that didn't eat anything but it gained weight. And that would be perfect, you know. But that's selective breeding.
Will they ever get to a point, though, that you can get that tissue, get the egg, and then not even have to implant it in an elephant, but just, like, put it in a...
Well, that's a technology I think that the Anunnaki had, because if you know the story of the flood, they didn't put all those animals, George, on that boat. It was impossible to save the species that existed on the planet Earth at that time. So what the Anunnaki did is they went around, they collected all the DNA from all the species, they put it in a little gold box and stuck it on Noah's submarine. And when the thing was done, they took the box and they recreated just from the DNA. This is the question you're asking. They recreated all the species. Now, how they did that, nobody knows.
Well, that's a dramatic story, Marshall. And they have already taken an organ of a dead animal. It was a mouse, planted it into a live mouse, and they had a live cloned mouse that way. So it does work. And now they're trying for the big thing with the mammoth. Marshall, thanks for being on the program. Up next, we're going to talk about how quantum activism, physics, can save civilization.